preface. I have endeavored in this ghostly little tale to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my listeners out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly, and no one wish to lay it by. Your faithful friend and servant, Charles Dickens. Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Stave 1. Marley's Ghost. Marley was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead? Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole friend, and sole mourner. The mention of Marley's funeral brings me back to the point I started from. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I am going to relate. Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood years afterwards, above the warehouse door, Scrooge and Marley. The firm was known as Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge, and sometimes Marley. He answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. External heat and cold had little influence on Scrooge. No warmth could warm, no wintry weather chill him. Nobody ever stopped him on the street with gladsome looks to say, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what it was o'clock. No man or woman ever once in all his life inquired the way to such and such a place of Scrooge. But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked, to edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance. Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, upon a Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting, foggy weather. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who, in a dismal little cell beyond, a sort of tank, was copying letters. "Ah, Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!" cried a cheerful voice. It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, who came upon him so quickly that this was the first intimation he had of his approach. "Bah!" said Scrooge. "Humbug!"
"Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I am sure."
"I do. Out upon Merry Christmas. If I had my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should."
"Uncle!"
"Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way, and let me keep it in mine."
"Keep it, but you don't keep it."
"Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you, much good it has ever done you."
There are many things from which I might have derived good, by which I have not profited, I dare say, Christmas among the rest. But I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time, when it has come round, as the only time I know of when men and women seem to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it. You're quite a powerful speaker, sir. I wonder you don't go into the Parliament. Don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow. Why did you get married? Because I fell in love. Because you fell in love, growled Scrooge, as if that were the only one thing in the world more ridiculous than a Merry Christmas. Good afternoon. Nay, Uncle, but you never came to see me before that happened. Why give it as a reason for not coming now? Good afternoon. I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends? Good afternoon. I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute, but I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last, so a Merry Christmas, Uncle. Good afternoon. And a Happy New Year. Good afternoon. His nephew left the room without an angry word, notwithstanding. The clerk, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let two other people in. They were portly gentlemen, pleasant to behold, and now stood with their hats off in Scrooge's office.
"Scrooge and Marley's, I believe," said one of the gentlemen, referring to his list. "Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?"
"Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night."
"At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge," said the gentleman, taking up a pen, "it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir."
"Are there no prisons?"
"Plenty of prisons, but a few of us are endeavouring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. Well, we choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt, and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?"
"Nothing."
"You wish to be anonymous?"
"I wish to be left alone. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the prisons and the workhouses. They cost enough. And those who are badly off must go there."
"Oh, many can't go there, and many would rather die."
"If they would rather die, they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population. It's not my business. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen."
Seeing clearly that it would be useless to pursue their point, the gentlemen withdrew. Scrooge resumed his labors with an improved opinion of himself, and in a more facetious temper than was usual with him. The cold became intense, foggier yet and colder, piercing, searching, biting cold. At length, the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge dismounted from his stool, tacitly admitted the fact to the expectant clerk in the tank, who instantly snuffed his candle out and put on his hat.
"You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose."
"If quite convenient, sir."
"It's not convenient and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound."
"Yes, sir."
"And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work."
"It's only once a year, sir."
"A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the next morning."
The clerk promised that he would, and Scrooge walked out with a growl. The office was closed in a twinkling, and the clerk ran home to Camden Town as hard as he could pelt. Scrooge went home to bed. He lived in chambers which had once belonged to his deceased partner. The yard was so dark that even Scrooge, who knew its every stone, was fain to grope with his hands. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. And then let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw not a knocker, but Marley's face. Marley's face. It was not angry or ferocious, but it looked at Scrooge as Marley used to look, with ghostly spectacles turned up on its ghostly forehead. As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon,
It was a knocker again. Up Scrooge went, not caring a button for its being very dark. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. But before he shut his heavy door, he walked through his rooms to see that all was right. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in, double-locked himself in, which was not his custom. Thus secured against surprise, he took off his cravat, put on his dressing gown, slippers, his nightcap, and sat down before the very low fire to take his gruel. As he threw his head back in the chair, Scrooge heard a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains. The cellar door flew open with a booming sound, and then he heard the noise much louder on the floors below, then coming up the stair, then coming straight towards his door. It came on through the heavy door, and a specter passed into the room before his eyes. The same face, the very same. Marley. Though he looked the phantom through and through and saw it standing before him, though he felt the chilling influence of its death-cold eyes, he was still incredulous and fought against his senses. How now? What do you want with me? March. Marley's voice, no doubt about it.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Who are you then?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Can you sit down?
I can.
Do it then.
Scrooge fell upon his knees and clasped his hands before his face. Mercy, dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?
Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?
I do. I must. You are fettered. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it. Link by link and yard by yard, I girded it on of my own free will. And of my own free will, I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you, or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain.
Scrooge glanced about him on the floor, in the expectation of finding himself surrounded by some 50 or 60 fathoms of iron cable, but he could see nothing.
I cannot tell you all I would. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. Mark me, in life, my spirit never roved beyond the narrow limits of our money-changing hole, and weary journeys lie before me.
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. Hear me. My time is nearly gone.
I will, but don't be hard upon me, Jacob, pray.
I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. A chance and hope of my procuring, Ebenezer. You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Is that the chance and hope you mentioned, Jacob? I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow night when the bell tolls 1. Expect the 2nd on the next night at the same hour, the 3rd upon the next night, when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more, and look that for your own sake. You remembered what has passed between us.
It walked backward from him, and at every step it took, the window raised itself a little so that when the specter reached it, it was wide open. Scrooge closed the window and examined the door by which the ghost had entered.
It was double-locked, as he had locked it with his own hands, and the bolts were undisturbed. Scrooge tried to say, "Humbug," but stopped at the first syllable. And being from the emotion he had undergone, or the fatigues of the day, or his glimpse of the invisible world, or the dull conversation of the ghost, or the lateness of the hour, much in need of repose, he went straight to bed without undressing, and fell asleep upon the instant. Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Stave 2. The First of the Three Spirits. When Scrooge awoke, the chimes of a neighboring church struck the four quarters, so he listened for the hour. To his great astonishment, the heavy bell tolled with a deep, dull, hollow, melancholy one. The curtains of his bed were drawn aside, and Scrooge found himself face to face with the unearthly visitor who drew them. It was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man. Its hair, which hung about its neck and down its back, was white as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle in it, and the tenderest bloom was on the skin. "Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?" "I am."
"Who and what are you?"
"I am the ghost of Christmas past."
"Long past?"
"No, your past." Scrooge then made bold to inquire what business brought him there.
"Your welfare, your reclamation. Take heed."
It put out its strong hand as it spoke and clasped him gently by the arm.
"Rise and walk with me."
The grasp, though gentle as a woman's hand, was not to be resisted. He rose. They passed through the wall and stood upon an open country road with fields on either hand.
"Good heaven! I was bred in this place. I was a boy here."
"You recollect the way?"
inquired the spirit. "Remember it. I could walk it blindfolded."
"Strange to have forgotten it for so many years," observed the ghost. "Let us go on." Why did his cold eye glisten? Why was he filled with gladness? What was Merry Christmas to Scrooge? Out upon Merry Christmas! What good had it ever done to him? The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
"Know it," said Scrooge. "I was apprenticed here."
They went in. At the sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig sitting behind such a high desk, Scrooge cried in great excitement.
"Why, it's old Fezziwig, bless his heart. It's Fezziwig alive again."
Old Fezziwig laid down his pen and called out in a comfortable, oily, rich, fat, jovial voice,
"Yo-ho there, Ebenezer Dick!"
Scrooge's former self, now a young man, came briskly in, accompanied by his fellow apprentice.
"Dick Williams, to be sure, bless me, yes, there he is."
"Yo-ho, my boys," said Fezziwig. "No more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick. Christmas, Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters up before a man can say Jack Robinson. Hilly-ho, clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here."
Clear away. There was nothing they wouldn't have cleared away or couldn't have cleared away with old Fezziwig looking on. It was done in a minute. The warehouse was as snug and warm and dry and bright a ballroom as you would desire to see upon a winter's night. In came a fiddler with a music book. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile. In came three Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable.
In came 6 young followers whose hearts they broke. In came all the young men and women employed in the business. In they all came, anyhow and everyhow. There were dances, and there were forfeits, and more dances, and there was cake, and there were mince pies. Then old Fezziwig stood out to dance with Mrs. Fezziwig. Away they all went, 20 couples at once, hands half round and back again the other way, down the middle and up again. When the clock struck 11, this domestic ball broke up. Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig took their stations, one on either side of the door, and shaking hands with every person individually as he or she went out, wished him or her a Merry Christmas. When everybody had retired but the 2 prentices, they did the same to them. And thus the cheerful voices died away, and the lads were left to their beds, which were under a counter in the back shop.
A small matter, said the ghost, to make these silly folks so full of gratitude.
Small, echoed Scrooge.
Why, is it not?
He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money, 3 or 4, perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves this praise?
It isn't that, Spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune.
He felt the Spirit's glance and stopped.
What is the matter?
Nothing in particular.
Something, I think.
No. I should like to be able to say a word or 2 to my clerk just now, that's all.
His former self turned down the lamps as he gave utterance to the wish, and Scrooge and the ghost again stood side by side in the open air.
My time grows short. Quick!
This was not addressed to Scrooge or to anyone whom he could see, but it produced an immediate effect, for again Scrooge saw himself. He was older now, a man in the prime of life. There was an eager, greedy, restless motion in the eye, which showed the passion that had taken root, and where the shadow of the growing tree would fall. He was not alone, but sat by the side of a fair young girl in whose eyes there were tears, which sparkled in the light that shone out of the ghost of Christmas past.
"It matters little," she said softly. "To you, very little. Another idol has displaced me, and if it can cheer and comfort you in time to come, I have no just cause to grieve."
"What idol has displaced you?"
"A golden one. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one until the master passion, gain, engrosses you. Have I not?"
"What then? Even if I have grown so much wiser, what then? I am not changed toward you, am I?"
"Our contract is an old one. It was made when we were both poor. You are changed. When it was made, you were another man."
"I was a boy."
"I can release you."
"Have I ever sought release?"
"In words, no. Never."
"In what, then?"
"In a changed nature. In an altered spirit, in another atmosphere of life, another hope as its great end. In everything that made my love of any worth or value in your sight. But if you were free today, tomorrow, yesterday, can I even believe that you would choose a dowerless girl? And I release you. May you be happy in the life you have chosen."
She left him, and they parted.
"Spirit," said Scrooge, "show me no more. Conduct me home. Why do you delight to torture me?"
"I told you, these were shadows of the things that have been. That they are what they are, do not blame me."
"Remove me. I cannot bear it. Leave me. Take me back. Haunt me no longer."
Scrooge was conscious of being exhausted and overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and further, of being in his own bedroom, and had barely time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep.
Thank you. Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Stave 3, the second of the three spirits. Awaking in the middle of a prodigiously tough snore and sitting up in bed to get his thoughts together, Scrooge had no occasion to be told that the bell was again upon the stroke of one. He established a sharp lookout all round the bed, for he wished to challenge the spirit on the moment of its appearance, and did not wish to be taken by surprise and made nervous. Now, being prepared for almost anything, he was not by any means prepared for nothing. He lay upon his bed, the very core and center of a blaze of ruddy light. He began to think that the source and secret of this ghostly light might be in the adjoining room from whence, on further tracing it, it seemed to shine. This idea, taking full possession of his mind, he got up softly and shuffled in his slippers to the door. The moment Scrooge's hand was on the lock, a strange voice called him by his name and bade him enter. He obeyed. It was his own room, there was no doubt about that, but it had undergone a surprising transformation. In easy state upon this couch, there sat a giant, glorious to see, who bore a glowing torch, in shape not unlike Plenty's horn, and held it up, high up, to shed its light on Scrooge as he came peeping round the door. Come in, and know me better, man. I am the ghost of Christmas Present. You have never seen the like of me before, exclaimed the spirit. Never, spirit. Conduct me where you will. I went forth last night on compulsion, and I learnt a lesson which is working now. Tonight, if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it. Touch my robe! Scrooge did as he was told, and held it fast. All vanished instantly, the room, the fire, and all its contents, and they went on, invisible, straight to Scrooge's clerk. The spirit smiled, and stopped to bless Bob Cratchit's dwelling with the sprinkling of his torch. Then up rose Mrs. Cratchit, Cratchit's wife, and she laid the cloth, assisted by Belinda Cratchit, second of her daughters, while Master Peter Cratchit plunged the fork into the saucepan of potatoes, and now two smaller Cratchits, boy and girl, came tearing in, screaming that outside the baker's they had smelt the goose, and known it for their own. "Whatever's got your precious father, then?" said Mrs. Cratchit. "And your brother, Tiny Tim, and Martha weren't as late last Christmas day by half an hour." "Here's Martha, mother," cried the two young Cratchits. "Hurrah! Oh, there's such a goose, Martha!" "Why, bless your heart alive, my dear, how late you are!" "We'd a good deal of work to finish up last night, and had to clear away this morning, mother." "Well, never mind, so long as you are come. Sit ye down before the fire, my dear, and have a warm, Lord bless ye." "No, no, there's father coming," cried the two young Cratchits, who were everywhere at once. "Hide, Martha, hide." So Martha hid herself, and in came Bob the father and Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Alas, for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch. "Why, where's our Martha?" cried Bob Cratchit, looking around. "Not coming." "Not coming? Not coming upon Christmas Day?" Martha didn't like to see him disappointed, if it were only in joke, so she came out prematurely from behind the closet door and ran into his arms, while the two young Cratchits hustled Tiny Tim and bore him off to the wash-house, that he might hear the pudding singing in the copper. "And how did little Tim behave?" "Oh, as good as gold, and better. Somehow he gets thoughtful sitting by himself so much, and he thinks the strangest things you ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in the church because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see." Bob's voice was tremulous when he told them this, and trembled more when he said that Tiny Tim was growing strong and hearty. At last, the dinner was all done. Then all the Cratchit family drew round the hearth. Then Bob proposed, "A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us!" which all the family re-echoed.
God bless us, everyone, said Tiny Tim, the last of all.
He sat very close to his father's side upon his little stool. Bob held his withered little hand in his as if he loved the child and wished to keep him by his side and dreaded that he might be taken from him.
Spirit, said Scrooge, with an interest he had never felt before, tell me if Tiny Tim will live.
I see a vacant seat, replied the ghost, in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved if these shadows remain unaltered by the future. The child will die.
No, no, oh, kind spirit, say he will be spared.
If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other will find him here. What then? If he be like to die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population.
Scrooge hung his head to hear his own words quoted by the spirit and was overcome with penitence and grief.
Man, will you decide what men shall live, what men shall die? It may be that in the sight of heaven you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child.
Scrooge bent before the ghost's rebuke and trembling cast his eyes upon the ground, but he raised them speedily on hearing his own name.
Mr. Scrooge, said Bob, I give you Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast.
The founder of the feast, indeed, cried Mrs. Cratchit, reddening. I wish I had him here. I give him a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I hope he'd have good appetite for it.
My dear, the children, Christmas Day.
It should be Christmas Day, I am sure, on which one drinks the health of such an odious, stingy, odd, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge. You know who he is, Robert. Nobody knows it better than you do, poor fellow.
My dear, Christmas Day. I'll drink his health for your sake and the day, not for his. Long life to him. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I have no doubt.
The children drank the toast after her. It was the first of their proceedings which had no heartiness. Tiny Tim drank it last of all, but he didn't care a tuppence for it. Scrooge was the ogre of the family. The mention of his name cast a dark shadow on the party, which was not dispelled for full 5 minutes. After it had passed away, they were 10 times merrier than before, and by they had a song about
a lost child traveling in the snow, traveling in the snow.
From Tiny Tim, who had a plaintive little voice, and sang it very well indeed. There was nothing of high mark in this. They were not a handsome family. They were not well dressed. Their shoes were far from being waterproof. Their clothes were scanty. But they were happy, grateful, pleased with one another, and contented with the time, and when they faded, and looked happier yet in the bright sprinklings of the spirit's torch at parting, Scrooge had his eye upon them, and especially upon Tiny Tim, until the last. Scrooge and the ghost were then in another place, a bright, dry, gleaming room. It was a great surprise to Scrooge to hear a hearty laugh. It was a much greater surprise to Scrooge to recognize it as his own nephew's. Laughed Scrooge's nephew. When Scrooge's nephew laughed in this way, holding his sides, rolling his head, and twisting his face into the most extravagant contortions, Scrooge's niece, by marriage, laughed as heartily as he. And their assembled friends, being not a bit behindhand, roared out lustily.
He said that Christmas was a humbug, as I live. He believed it, too. More shame on him, Fred.
Oh, he's a comical old fellow, that's the truth, and not so pleasant as he might be. However, his offences carry their own punishment, and I have nothing to say against him.
Oh, I am sure he's very rich, Fred. At least you always tell me so.
What of that, my dear? His wealth is of no use to him. He don't do any good with it. He don't make himself comfortable with it. He hasn't the satisfaction of thinking that he is ever going to benefit us with it. I have no patience with him.
Oh, I have.
I am sorry for him. I couldn't be angry with him if I tried. Who suffers by his ill whims? Himself, always. Here, he takes it into his head to dislike us, and he won't come and dine with us. What's the consequence? He don't lose much of a dinner. Indeed, I think he loses a very good dinner. I was only going to say that the consequence of his taking a dislike to us and not making merry with us is, as I think, that he loses some pleasant moments, which could do him no harm. I mean to give him the same chance every year, whether he likes it or not, for I pity him. He may rail at Christmas till he dies, but he can't help thinking better of it. I defy him, if he finds me going there in good temper year after year, and saying, "Uncle Scrooge, how are you?" If it only puts him in the vein to leave his poor clerk 50 pounds, oh, and I think I shook him yesterday. It was now their turn to laugh at the notion of his shaking Scrooge. "Here is a new game," said Scrooge. "One half-hour, Spirit, only one." It was a game called Yes and No, where Scrooge's nephew had to think of something and the rest must find out what, he only answering to their questions yes or no. The brisk fire of questioning to which he was exposed elicited from him that he was thinking of an animal, a live animal, rather a disagreeable animal, a savage animal, an animal that growled and grunted sometimes, talked sometimes, lived in London, walked about the streets, wasn't made a show of, wasn't led by anybody, didn't live in a menagerie, was never killed in a market, and was not a horse or an ass or a cow or a bull or a tiger or a dog or a pig or a cat or a bear. At every new question that was put to him, this nephew burst into a fresh roar of laughter and was so inexpressibly tickled that he was obliged to get up off the sofa and stamp. At last, the plump sister cried out, "I have found it out. I know what it is, Fred. I know what it is." "What is it?" "It's your Uncle Scrooge." Which it certainly was. Admiration was the universal sentiment, though some objected to the reply to "Is it a bear?" ought to have been yes. He has given us plenty of merriment, I am sure, and it would be ungrateful not to drink his health. Here's a glass of mulled wine ready to our hand at the moment, and I say, Uncle Scrooge, a merry Christmas and a happy New Year to the old man, whatever he is. He wouldn't take it from me, but he may have it. Nevertheless, Uncle Scrooge. Uncle Scrooge had imperceptibly become so light of heart that he would have thanked them in an inaudible speech if the ghost had given him time, but the whole scene passed off in the breath of the last words spoken by his nephew, and he and the spirit were again upon their travels. It was a long night, if it were only a night, but Scrooge had his doubts of this because the Christmas holidays appeared to be condensed into the space of time they passed together. It was strange, too, that while Scrooge remained unaltered in his outward form, the ghost grew older, clearly older. "Forgive me if I am not justified in what I ask," said Scrooge, looking intently at the spirit's robe. "But I see something strange and not belonging to yourself protruding from your skirts. Is it a foot or a claw?" "It might be a claw, for the flesh there is upon it. Look here!" From the foldings of its robe, it brought two children, wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable. They knelt down at its feet and clung upon the outside of its garment. "Oh, man, look here, look! Look down here!" exclaimed the ghost. They were a boy and a girl, yellow, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish, but prostrate, too, in their humility. Scrooge started back, appalled. Having them shown to him in this way, he tried to say they were fine children, but the words choked themselves. "Spirit, are they yours?" Scrooge could say no more. "They are man's, and they cling to me, appealing from their fathers. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both, and all of their degree, but most of all, beware this boy, for on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased. Deny it! Have they no refuge or resource?" "Are there no prisons?" said the spirit, turning on him for the last time with his own words. "Are there no workhouses?" The bell struck 12.
Scrooge looked about him for the ghost and saw it not. As the last stroke ceased to vibrate, he remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley, and lifting up his eyes, beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him. Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Stave 4, The Last of the Spirits. The Phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. It was shrouded in a deep black garment which concealed its head, its face, its form, and left nothing of it visible save one outstretched hand. Its mysterious presence filled him with a solemn dread. The spirit neither spoke nor moved.
"I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come."
The spirit answered not, but pointed onward with its hand.
"You are about to show me shadows of the things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so, spirit?"
The upper portion of the garment was contracted for an instant in its folds, as if the spirit had inclined its head. That was the only answer he received. Although well used to ghostly company by this time, Scrooge feared the silent shape so much that his legs trembled beneath him. He could see nothing but a spectral hand and one great heap of black.
"Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any specter I have seen, but as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me?"
It gave him no reply. The hand was pointed straight before them.
"Lead on. Lead on, spirit."
Scrooge followed. The spirit stopped beside one little knot of businessmen. Observing that the hand was pointed to them, Scrooge advanced to listen to their talk.
"No, I don't know much about it either way. I only know he's dead."
"When did he die?"
"Last night, I believe."
"Why, what was the matter with him? I thought he'd never die."
"What has he done with his money?"
"Oh, I haven't heard. Left it to his company, perhaps. He hasn't left it to me, that's all I know."
This pleasantry was received with a general laugh.
"It's likely to be a very cheap funeral, for upon my life I don't know of anybody to go to it. Suppose we make up a party and volunteer."
"Oh, I don't mind going if lunch is provided."
Another laugh.
"Well, I am the most disinterested among you, after all, but I'll offer to go if anybody else will. When I come to think of it, I'm not at all sure that I wasn't his most particular friend, for we used to stop and speak whenever we met. Bye-bye."
Speakers and listeners strolled away and mixed with other groups. Scrooge knew the men and looked towards the spirit for an explanation. Scrooge was at first inclined to be surprised that the spirit should attach importance to conversations apparently so trivial. They could scarcely be supposed to have any bearing on the death of Jacob, his old partner, for that was past, and this ghost's province was the future. Nor could he think of anyone immediately connected with himself to whom he could apply them. He looked about, in that very place, for his own image, but he saw no likeness of himself among the multitudes. Quiet and dark, beside him stood the phantom, with its outstretched hand. Scrooge fancied the unseen eyes were looking at him keenly. It made him shudder and feel very cold. They left the busy scene and went into an obscure part of the town where Scrooge recognized its situation and its bad repute. The ways were foul and narrow, the shops and houses wretched. Far in this den of infamous resort, there was a shop where iron, old rags, bottles, bones, and greasy offal were bought. Upon the floor within were piled up heaps of rusty keys, nails, chains, hinges, files, scales, weights, and refuge iron of all kinds. Sitting in among the wares he dealt in was a gray-haired rascal, nearly 70 years of age. Scrooge and the Phantom came into the presence of this man just as a woman with a heavy bundle slunk into the shop. But she had scarcely entered when another woman came in too, and she was closely followed by a man in faded black, who was no less startled by the sight of them than they had been upon the recognition of each other. After a short period of blank astonishment, they all three burst into a laugh.
"Let the charwoman alone to be the first," cried she who had entered first. "Let the laundress alone to be second, and let the undertaker's man alone to be the third. Look here, old Joe, here's a chance if we haven't all three met here without meaning it."
"Oh, you couldn't have met in a better place,"
said old Joe, removing his pipe from his mouth.
"Come into the parlour. You were made free of it long ago, you know, and the other two ain't strangers. What have you got to sell? What have you got to sell?"
"What odds, then? What odds, Mrs. Dilber? Every person has a right to take care of themselves. He always did. That's enough. Who's the worse for a loss of a few things like these? Not a dead man, I suppose. If he wanted to keep him after he was dead, a wicked old screw, why wasn't he natural in his lifetime? If he had been, he'd have had somebody to look after him when he was struck with death, instead of lying, gasping out his last there, alone by himself.
It's the truest word that ever spoke. It's a judgment on him. I wish it was a little heavier judgment, and it should have been. You may depend upon it, if I could have laid my hands on anything else. Open that bundle, old Joe. Let me know the value of it. Speak out plain. I'm not afraid to be the first, nor afraid for them to see it. Oh, open the bundle, Joe. I always give too much to ladies. It's a weakness of mine, and that's the way I ruin myself.
Joe went down on his knees for the greater convenience of opening the bundle and dragged out a large and heavy roll of some dark stuff.
"What do you call this? Bed curtains?" "Ah, bed curtains." "You don't mean to say you took them down, rings and all, with him lying there?" "Well, yes, I do. Why not? Don't drop that oil up on the blankets now." "His blankets? Whose else do you think?" replied the woman. "Isn't likely to take cold without him, I dare say." "I hope he didn't die of anything catching, eh?"
said old Joe, stopping in his work and looking up.
"Ah, you may look through that shirt till your eyes ache, but you won't find a hole in it, nor a threadbare place. It's the best he had, and a fine one too. They'd have wasted it if it hadn't been for me."
"What do you call wasting of it?"
"Putting it on him to be buried in.
To be sure, somebody was fool enough to do it, but I took it off again."
Scrooge listened to this dialogue in horror.
"This is the end of it, you see. He frightened away everyone from him when he was alive to profit us when he was dead."
"Spirit, I see the case of this unhappy man might be my own. My life tends that way now.
Merciful heaven, what is this?"
He recoiled in terror, for the scene had changed, and now he almost touched a bed, a bare, uncurtained bed. A pale light, rising in the outer air, fell straight upon the bed, and on it, unwatched, unwept, uncared for, was the body of this plundered man. Scrooge glanced towards the Phantom. His steady hand was pointed to the head. The cover was so carelessly adjusted that the slightest raising of it, the motion of a finger upon Scrooge's part, would have disclosed the face.
"Spirit," he said, "this is a fearful place. In leaving it, I shall not leave its lesson, trust me. Let us go."
Still the ghost pointed with an unmoved finger to the head.
I understand you, and I would uncover this corpse if I could, but I have not the power, Spirit. I have not the power."
Again it seemed to look upon him.
"Spirit, I beseech you,
Let me see some tenderness connected with the death, or this dark chamber will be forever present to me. The ghost conducted him to poor Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and the children seated round the fire. Quiet. Very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner, and sat looking up at Peter, who had a book before him. The mother and her daughters were engaged in needlework. But surely, they were very quiet. "And he took a child and set him in the midst of them." Where had Scrooge heard those words? He had not dreamed them. The boy must have read them out as he and the spirit crossed the threshold. Why did he not go on? The mother laid her work upon the table and put her hand up to her face. "The color hurts my eyes," she said. "The color? Ah, poor Tiny Tim." "They're better now again. It makes them weak by candlelight, and I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. It must be near his time." "Past it, rather," Peter answered, shutting up his book. "But I think he has walked a little slower than he used these last few evenings, mother. I have known him to walk with... I have known him to walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder very fast indeed." "And so have I," cried Peter. "Often." "And so have I," exclaimed another. So had all. "But he was very light to carry, and his father loved him so. It was no trouble. No trouble. And there is your father at the door." She hurried out to meet him, and little Bob in his comforter, he had need of it, poor fellow, came in. His tea was ready for him on the hob, and they all tried who should help him to it most. Then the two young Cratchits got upon his knees and laid each child a little cheek against his face, as if they said, "Don't mind it, father. Don't be grieved." Bob was very cheerful with them and spoke pleasantly to all the family. He looked at the needlework upon the table and praised the industry and speed of Mrs. Cratchit and the girls. "They would be done long before Sunday," he said.
"Sunday? You went today then, Robert?"
"Yes, my dear," returned Bob. "I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday."
"My little, little child. My little child."
He broke down all at once. He couldn't help it.
"However, and whenever we part from one another, I am sure we shall none of us forget poor Tiny Tim, shall we? Or this first parting that there was among us?"
"Never, father," cried they all.
"And I know," said Bob, "I know, my dears, that when we recollect how patient and how mild he was, although he was a little, little child, we shall not quarrel easily among ourselves and forget poor Tiny Tim in doing it."
"No, never, father,"
they all cried again.
"I am very happy. I am very happy."
"Spectre," said Scrooge, "something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Tell me what man that was whom we saw lying dead." The ghost of Christmas, yet to come, conveyed him as before to a dismal, wretched, ruinous churchyard. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one.
"Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they shadows of things that may be only?"
Still, the ghost pointed downward to the grave by which it stood.
"Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which, if persevered in, they must lead. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me."
The spirit was immovable as ever. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge.
Am I that man who lay upon the bed? No, spirit, oh, no, no, spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been but for your intercession. Why, show me this, if I am past all hope. Good spirit, your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Assure me that I may yet change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. For the first time, the kind hand faltered. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone. Holding up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. Yes, the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven in the Christmas time be praised for this. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees. He was so fluttered and so glowing with his good intentions that his broken voice would scarcely answer to his call. He had been sobbing violently in his conflict with the spirit, and his face was wet with tears. I don't know what to do. I am as light as a feather. I am as happy as an angel. I am as merry as a schoolboy. I am as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world. Hello here. Hello. He had frisked into the sitting room and was now standing there perfectly winded. There's the door by which the ghost of Jacob Marley entered. There's the corner where the ghost of Christmas Past sat. There's the window where I saw the wandering spirits. It's all right. It's all true. It all happened. Really, for a man who had been out of practice for so many years, it was a splendid laugh. A most illustrious laugh. The father of a long line of brilliant laughs. I don't know what day of the month it is, said Scrooge. I don't know how long I've been among the spirits. I don't know anything. Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. What's today? Cried Scrooge, calling downward to a boy in Sunday clothes. Eh? What's today, my fine fellow?
Today, replied the boy.
Why, Christmas Day.
It's Christmas Day. I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. They can do anything they like. Of course they can. Of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow.
Hello.
Do you know the poulterers in the next street but one at the corner?
Oh, I should hope I did.
An intelligent boy, a remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little prize turkey, the big one.
What? The one as big as me?
Oh, what a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him.
Yes, my buck. It's hanging there now.
Is it? Go and buy it.
What?
No, no, I am in earnest. Go and buy it and tell them to bring it here, that I may give them the direction where to take it. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown. The boy was off like a shot. I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's. He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim. The hand in which he wrote the address was not a steady one, but write it he did somehow, and went downstairs to open the street door, ready for the coming of the poulterer's man.
Here's the turkey. Hello! How are you? Merry Christmas!
It was a turkey. He never could have stood upon his legs, that bird. He would have snapped them short off in a minute like sticks of sealing wax. Scrooge dressed himself all in his best and at last got out into the streets. The people were by this time pouring forth as he had seen them with the ghost of Christmas Present, and walking with his hands behind him, Scrooge regarded every one with a delighted smile. He looked so irresistibly pleasant that three or four good-humored fellows said, "Good morning, sir. A Merry Christmas to you." And Scrooge said, often afterwards, that of all the blithe sounds he had ever heard,
Those were the blithest in his ears. He went to church and walked about the streets and watched the people hurrying to and fro and patted children on the head and questioned beggars. He had never dreamed that any walk, that anything, could give him so much happiness. In the afternoon, he turned his steps towards his nephew's house. He passed the door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock, but he made a dash and did it. "Is your master at home, my dear?" said Scrooge to the girl. "Nice girl. Very."
"Yes, sir."
"Where is he, my love?"
"He's in the dining room, sir, along with mistress. I'll show you upstairs, if you please."
"Oh, thank you. He knows me," said Scrooge, with his hand already on the dining room lock. "Fred!"
"Why, bless my soul," cried Fred. "Who's that?"
"It's I, your Uncle Scrooge. I have come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?"
Let him in? It's a mercy he didn't shake his arm off. He was at home in 5 minutes. Nothing could be heartier. Wonderful party, wonderful games, wonderful unanimity, wonderful happiness.
But he was early at the office next morning. Oh, he was early there. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late, that was the thing he had set his heart upon. And he did it. Yes, he did. The clock struck 9. No Bob. 1:15. No Bob. He was full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. Scrooge sat with his door wide open that he might see him come into the tank. Bob's hat was off before he opened the door, and his comforter, too. He was on his stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen, as if he were trying to overtake 9 o'clock. "Hello," growled Scrooge, in his accustomed voice, as near as he could feign it. "What do you mean by coming here at this time of day?"
I'm very sorry, sir. I am behind my time."
"You are, yes. I think you are. Step this way, sir, if you please."
"It's only once a year, sir. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir."
"Now I'll tell you what, my friend. I am not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore..."
Scrooge continued, leaping from his stool and giving Bob such a dig in the waistcoat that he staggered back into the tank again.
"And therefore,
I am about to raise your salary."
"A Merry Christmas, Bob," said Scrooge with an earnestness that could not be mistaken, as he clapped him on the back. "A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family, and we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon. Bob, make up the fires, and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit."
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more, and to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, and little heeded them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good, at which some people did not have their fill of laughter in the outset, and knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further interactions with spirits, and it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.